And I'm Sebastian.
I discovered something.
Yes?
Is more affected by climate change, according to some badly reported stories. Did you know that?
Does it have to do with like solar flares in our gaydar or something like that?
That's exactly it. No, it's really quite interesting. So there was one study that looked really, if you took a map of where a lot of the homosexuals like to live, and a map of where the worst impacts of climate change are going to be.
So
So
low-lying
typically,
and coastal metropolitan city centers.
that is exactly it. But, I'm sure there are an awful lot of straight people also in low-lying metro coastal areas. But because queer folks tend to migrate into low-lying metropolitan coastal areas, there is a hybridization of the gays in low-lying metropolitan coastal areas.
So we're talking about like
And,
Oslo and Tokyo and
oh, even Cisco, New York, those, even Toronto, maybe not Toronto because
no,
nothing
maybe not
more.
Toronto. And London is uphill. London is significantly uphill. But the Thames has been affected by climate change already. But there's also a trend. All of the major socioeconomically disadvantaged groups as a broad sweeping generalization are going to be affected by climate change disproportionately. So we're not just talking, LGBT folks. We're also talking about people with disabilities. We're also talking about ethnic minorities in every country, because every country has an ethnic minority. There's going to be like it's kind of across the board in general. Youth, the people who are too young to vote or work are disproportionately affected. Like it is kind of across the board. So, the assumption that the LGBT folks, even those who live not in low-lying coastal metropolitan centers, will be disproportionately affected. It'll just be any disadvantaged group will be disproportionately affected. Even if it's just things like food costs go up and then that eats into their budget more, which means they have less disposable income. It's a thing.
Well, according to the Williams Institute at UCLA School of Law, the University of California, Los Angeles, they look at US Census data, they looked at climate risk assessment data from NASA and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, to look at areas where, particularly the counties in the US, where a larger number of people might suffer from air pollution, flooding, those kinds of things. We're obviously going to have in climate change in those areas, but at the same time, I don't think that's at a higher rate than the rest of Canada per se. So maybe for the Canadian gays, we're about as impacted as everybody else, but for the American gays, they all have to move to Idaho.
In Victoria and Nanaimo, or on the other coast, if you're in St. John or Halifax, then you'll probably be impacted. Even Vancouver, which is on the water, it's on a pretty hefty slope. So, it's generally like the water would really have to go up. We're talking about like world destroying levels of oceanic levels rising for Vancouver to be impacted. Like you've been there. You've seen how much of a hill that city is.
Okay, so are you familiar with Priscilla, Queen of the Desert?
I've seen that movie like 20 times. Yes, I'm familiar with the adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Yes.
And for our audience, can you tell them a little bit about this 19th Australian film and why it is important to the gays?
I could talk about this for 3 hours. I don't know what to start with. Okay. So, one of the things that I really liked about the movie is that it depicted it very, very strongly humanized the experience of inner city, gay folks, specifically from Sydney. It showed them as, being individuals who are struggling for equality, but also as being flawed humans who also still make decisions. Their identities were not entirely focused around their sexuality, which a lot of people tap into as a positive about the movie. They weren't defined by being gay. They had other things in their lives going on, but them being gay is a very big part of it. One of the best things about it is considered one of the best road trip movies ever made. It starts with just a little bit of preamble before they get on the bus. The most of the movie, the bus. And then when they get home, the movie is over. Some of the things that happen before the movie resolve while they're on the bus, and some of the things that start on the bus don't resolve, because that's how life works. Things don't resolve neatly in time for the movie to end. But if I were to talk about themes, it would be, it's definitely a thing about change, because you have individuals who need to change, people who want to change but don't know how, and people who are ready for change but don't know what direction into. It's very much themed around individuals who need to grow, and they do grow throughout the movie. It is very thematically strong, probably one of the most important parts of the movie, not leaning towards. But in 2003, I think it was, on September 11, after the towers fell, and everybody knew that they couldn't go on life as usual, they had to do something else. A lot of movies in the US, not a lot of movies, a lot of TV stations in the US canceled their regular programming and put Priscilla on because they wanted something with a happy ending, but not a saccharine happy ending. So a lot of them, totally independent of each other, just converged. And then Priscilla was just played all over the place in the US on that day instead of the regular programming, because they wanted something that was grounded and realistic, that actually acknowledged human suffering, but was fundamentally an optimistic movie with a more or less happy ending.
Well, it's been in the news. Obviously, we are looking at the 30-year anniversary of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And there was an effort being made by, I forgot the name, it's direct museum, but there's one museum, the Birdwoods National Motor Museum in New South Wales. Oh, sorry, it was found in New South Wales, but the South Australian government jumped in. They found the Priscilla, Queen of the Desert bust.
Okay, they found the bus.
It was in dire need of repair. So I think on a Friday they announced they found the bus. They were going to fix it. The South Australian government just shot in $100,000 to repair the bus, and then they raised the other 65,000 within just a matter of days. With a decent chunks coming in from abroad. A lot of them came in before the Australians were even awake. Right? Donations coming in from Germany, France, all over the place, to get this bus repaired and up in the Motor Museum. But there's even more Priscilla, Queen of the Desert news this week, in
Really?
that the director, Stephen Elliott, has confirmed that Terence Stamp, Guy Pearce, and Hugo Weaving are all on board for a sequel to
Oh
Priscilla,
my.
Queen of the Desert. Now, it's worth mentioning that Terence Stamp, I believe, is currently in his 80s,
Yeah.
give or
Not
take.
a young man,
So
yeah.
we'll see how it goes. I believe they want to give RuPaul a run for his money. And that's sort of where we are at now. But yeah, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert might ride again.
If anything, it might turn out like the sequel to Trainspotting, where it acknowledged 30 years had passed and these people had grown and changed, and the world had grown and changed, and the world that they used changed. And I really, given the themes and the nature of the original movie, that they really do focus on that. Even if one of them is still doing drag, I like the idea of show. They've grown and moved on with their lives and have become new and different people, which we all do. And maybe they're still doing the same
Absolutely.
thing, and maybe they're not doing the same thing. I'm excited for this. I look forward to it.
All right, we are going to jump to our first song. This is Shade of Hue by Henrik. This is a brand new track by a brand new singer-songwriter. 19-year-old out of Toronto just posted this song not that long ago. I think it's pretty good. Let's give Henrik a bit of a break here and let us know what you think.
Spelled into everything to die for so good.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we are very excited to have a published author and definitely a scientist. Mm-hmm. Rob Anderson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
With an audio format, so the air quotes are hard to translate for folks, but I can assure you there is heavy air quotes. Now, we're going to be talking about, and the reason why I imply that you were a scientist is because your book, it's a tome. It looks and but is like not.
A science textbook.
Like a regular science textbook.
Yeah.
Look at it. It says gay science. Mm-hmm. Quote, the totally scientific examination of LGBTQ culture myths and stereotypes.
And actually, when I flipped through it, I didn't have the time to sit down and actually read it cover to cover. But I did actually get my hands on the physical copy. And when I was looking at, and this is me speaking as somebody who is a technical writer, who does documentation and stuff. When I looked through it, it looked like it was made using LaTeX, which is the computer language they use to make science textbooks. It looked like it went through Wiley, which is like the usual like chemistry and biology textbook generator. And there was just something about it that felt tangible. I think, I don't know, it's kind of a, maybe it's just sort of an aesthetic choice to make it look and feel a certain way, but there was something kind of fun about that for sure.
Yeah, definitely. That was the goal, to make it look and feel like a science textbook that you're familiar with, that has sidebars, but mm-hmm. all highly satirical.
Now, in fact, this is the first time I've seen a science textbook of any kind that has not one, but I think multiple warnings to not take itself too seriously. In fact, there is a huge page that just says, stop before you ban this book. And then there's another note on top of that where you appear to be held under duress by the publishing company to say, don't say we didn't say this. Were you at gunpoint? What was behind the disclaimers?
Yeah, so the book is based on a video series that I've had for a few years called Gay Science on the Internet. And I don't put any disclaimers there. I explain gay and queer stereotypes with my own version of science. And it's so clearly satire to me and many others. I mean, from the very beginning, I'm holding a douche as a pipette, a science pipette. So unfortunately, some people still see that and think it's serious. So that is what it is. But I think when you have a publisher involved, DK also makes real educational books. This is the first time they're making a satirical book in this way, they were a little concerned that people would take it seriously. So I am a little tongue-in-cheek in my explanations and warnings in the beginning. It's all quite funny, but I had to I was under duress, yes.
Now, I know you've got over 2.4 million followers on TikTok. You've been doing this content for a while. What inspired you to, the old adage is pen to paper, but what inspired you to convert this content into a book that folks have at home?
Yeah, I love writing and I have self-published a few different comedy books, and it's been my favorite thing to do. So, as I had these gay science episodes come out, I always thought this would be so great as a fake science textbook. Like, how awesome, like a coffee table book that explains it all with really cheesy stock images that you'd see in science books, but with ridiculous captions at the bottom and charts and graphs. So it's always been in the back of my mind, but it's such an ambitious project that I really couldn't have self-published it. So I did need a publisher on it. And eventually one said yes. But a lot were like, this is so niche, like a comedy book about queer culture, and it's satirical and it's science related. Like, who is gonna buy this? And I'm like, people will, I promise. And that's how it kind of came about.
Well, what I told your publishers, and I've told you, and I've said to everybody, I will say this on air, is I honestly believe every gay with a coffee table needs to own this book. It's the kind of like, oh, what's that about? And you flick through, and any page you land on is entertaining, and that is a unique trait. I haven't been bribed here. I just am a huge fan of the book. Like I said, any and every gay needs to go check it. Unfortunately, let me just make sure I've got the timing right, because we are recording this a little of the beast, so we are Monday, and it actually comes out tomorrow. So you're gonna have to hold your horses for your coffee table purchases for hours before they.
Tomorrow on time of publication, not time of recording.
Yes,
So you, the listener, right now, tomorrow for you.
yes.
But it is available for pre-order. So you can pre-order it
Oh
right
yeah,
now.
so just go online, look it
Yeah,
up.
I'm
Gay
looking at the pre-order
Science,
page right
Rob
now.
Anderson. It'll appear. It's fantastic. Now, you mentioned I'm not going to dwell too much on the aesthetic of the book because that's hard to convey in radio.
It
But
looks
you
like a
mentioned,
textbook. That's all you need to say.
it's a beautiful book. It's got a solid hug. But yeah, you mentioned the stock photos, which I thought were hilarious, but also that a fair number of them, I'm pretty sure, featured yourself. In some various costumes and things. Was it just you weren't able to find the right stock photo to convey the piece, or was this part of the maintaining work of putting the book together?
The images of me, most of them throughout the book, are just really silly photography of me in this character that I play, the professor of science who does and doesn't know what he's talking about. So I have little gags and jokes throughout with different things that feel queer attached to science, different props and whatnot, like DNA, but instead of like A and G, like the strands of DNA, it's like GAY, GAY. So there's like little jokes throughout. But most of the stock images are not me. They are real stock images. And I think if these people ever see that they're in this book, they'll get quite a kick out of how I've contextualized their stock images. I had a lot of fun with it. And then there's other photos of me throughout playing different types of queer people. But I tried to keep the two separate. I tried not to be a stock image myself.
I mean, that does kind of play into the gay stereotype that we'll use any excuse to dress up in costume. We used to have costume parties that were pretty wild, and people would spend weeks working. Well, our gay friends who showed up would spend weeks working on their costumes. I mean, talking about stereotypes there. I don't know what that is, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I
But not
heard
yet.
that Tia Coffey, the UK drag queen, spent $20,000 on her
I saw.
various apps. I mean, good for her. She looked amazing, but it's a lot of the gays take the looks very seriously. Now, One question that kind of bubbled up: this book could only, I think, ever be written by someone with a queer experience, and it covers the whole gambit. How did you get to writing this? Like, drawing on some or mostly your experience? Were you tapping into friends and the community? Like, how did you source all of the science?
Right. Well, initially, the video series was just based on my experiences as a gay man, like the first episode or two. And then, as I started to broaden that out and make jokes about lesbians, sexual people, and tried to hit like every letter of our queer alphabet, I just pay attention to what people are talking about in queer spaces, both online and offline, and generally get a sense of the most fun myths or stereotypes and keep it focused on that. So things that are very serious, or things that we're really fighting for that don't deserve a place of like lighthearted joking are kept out of this sort of material. And I've been really careful about that. So for example, the chapter on trans people, it kind of proves true that trans people invented pronouns, which of course is not true. It's an absurd thought to think that they did, but that's what we're having fun with. It's almost making fun of the detractors and the opposition of ignorant people who kind of like attack our community and not so much like the members within it. So you kind of feel good about being a part of the queer community with every chapter.
It really was a joke. It really is jokes that are from this collective lived experience, and I think that bleeds through it all the way. Like, the one thing that my partner Jake looked at it and he goes, "I don't get the thing about lesbians and technology." And I go, but I immediately, having covered queer film for as long as we have, understood where that joke was coming from. Just for our audience's sake, why, what is the thing? People need to, obviously, it's just one page in a very large book. What is the thing about lesbians and technology?
Yeah, so the chapter asks the questions, do lesbians hate electricity? Because it borrows from film, where most lesbian love stories that have been made take place in the 17 or 1800s, and they're churning butter and they're like meeting in a farmhouse. And so I ask the question, do lesbians hate electricity? Because it's not in any of their movies. And I break down which movies even have Wi-Fi, which is none of them. And then I come up with, like most of these chapters, some absurd reason as to why they do or don't like electricity. So it stems from media, actually, like strange representation of lesbian love stories in media.
Did you talk about detective novels?
Oh, I can't read. So,
Oh, there's a there's an there was a
I don't know how to
trend
read.
in in the 70s, I think, for 1930s and 40s style film, gumshoe detective lesbian stories. And there's hundreds of these books from dozens of different authors, but
Whoa.
they're all in the gas lamp age. Just electricity was common. So, I mean,
Weird.
it's on the doorstep of you being proven wrong, but it's still, yeah, no, there's a huge genre of lesbian detective novels.
Yeah, wow, that's really wild. Like, I don't know what it is. Actually, I do know what it is, and it's in the
Yes.
And we're not going to tell you. You'll have to go and check the book yourself. So I was thinking about, when was the last time we interviewed a scientist? And the one that stands out to me, it's another book, which is an anthology of neurological and medical studies of that have tried to look at the origins of homosexuality, gay, straight, and the reasons why, written by the UK's foremost expert on neuroscience.
Oh boy.
This is not that book.
No.
But but they did make me think about, what else, as you were going through this, there must have been moments where you're like, okay, that's the actual scientific reason behind something. Where for example, I think you have gay face, you have gaydar, things that have definitely been studied in the word for science, I'm forgetting, field. Where was that overlap? Did you see any overlap of like hard science and your science?
Yeah, so every chapter borrows some real scientific principles. They're not the real reason as to why that thing happens. Like, I think the voice, like why gay men have a high-pitched voice, is studied, and there is a real reason for it. I wanted to avoid that. I don't want anything real in it, but all the scientific principles are borrowed from some part of biology, chemistry, physics, oceanography, anthropology, sociology, even like computer science and forensics going into like formal sciences. So every chapter has its own real science to it. Like for astronomy, I break down all the planets, why each one of them is queer. Everything in their solar system and comets are all queer for a certain reason. But I did stay away from actual real explanations because some are out there, but that's really not what I was going for, I guess.
Some of the explanations are, well, in the scientific literature are speculative. We don't know. And some of what it is not many fields do this, but some fields do. It's called a squib, where it's basically it's a scientific article that says, I have no evidence for believing this, but I just have a gut feeling that this is true. Because you need to start with something and then you bootstrap off. I mean, the entire field of psychology bootstrapped off of proving every single thing that Sigmund Freud said as being either true or not true. And he literally admitted that he just made things up because you got to start from something. And then you just prove it right or wrong. And a lot of the sort of LGBT science sort of falls into that camp where people are like, I just think this might be the case. And then they come up with a theory, and then other people develop studies or experiments to prove it correct or incorrect. And over time, they actually have come up with a few things, hard science experiments to actually show some of this to be true or false.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I actually am thinking about this chapter I have on gunkles and like same-sex siblings. And in it, I mentioned that gunkles exist because if a parent died, whether it was eaten by wolves or, left home, it would the next of kin protector is the gay uncle or the lesbian aunt. And that is a theory that some people have about evolution. I have a little more fun with it, and I get into more ridiculous patterns from like what kinds of gunkles there are and subspecies of gunkle, which is not a real thing.
You didn't get into
Now
all
it
the theory
is.
about bees?
Oh no.
So in beehives, you have drones who are all the daughters of the queen. They're sterile, but the more drones there are, the higher the survival rate of all the other bees who can reproduce. So that's a second alternative theory. Not even an alternative, it's sort of a supportive theory. You can have like several theories that have nothing to do with each other that could all equally be true to different degrees in different ways. It's just when you have a gay uncle, you have someone who's less likely to have their own children and more likely to expend their resources on you, which is exactly how bees and wasps work. And actually, blind mole rats for some reason.
Oh my God.
Moving
Wow.
on from a nice Kim Possible reference there, Sebastian, where I wanted to mention one of the few references to Canadians that I spotted in this book. Navigating gay friend groups. I was looking at the sweatpants section earlier.